back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mintz. Today we have a recap of the National Signing Day and the recruiting class that we got yesterday, actually. I recorded this with Mike last night, but we wanted to make sure we got this out to you guys as quickly as possible. So don't have a lot of stuff on the front end or on the back end here for you. You know, this is just essentially was going to be us talking with Mike. So I will not delay any further. I'll get you right on over to that interview with Mike.
And I'm joined once again by Mike Plank, the editor-in-chief and supreme leader over at Rock Chalk Talk. Mike, how you doing?
Ooh, I like supreme leader. I'm doing great, Andy. How are you doing?
Pretty good. It's obviously been a little while since we had you on. It's been a little while since we decided to talk football. But this is also perfect timing because this is actually the first episode that's getting released as part of the new Rock Chalk Talk podcast channel. So perfect time to have you on anyway because of that. But obviously today being National Signing Day, you know, the big story of the day is wrapping up all of the guys that signed on to be brand new Jayhawks today. And there actually were quite a few more than I thought we were going to get. And there was quite a few surprises today. So with all that said, My first question to you is, what do you think the biggest surprise signing was for you today?
The biggest surprise? That's a great question. That's kind of a hard one to start off with. So thanks for that.
Well, can come back to it if you want.
I mean. No, I would say probably the athlete out of – is he out of Blue Valley who is committed to Michigan, Amari Pesek-Hickson. A three-star athlete who had a scholarship offer from Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. But then Michigan overbooked, basically. They said, hey, we're out of scholarships. Would you like to wait a semester and come on then? And he said, no thanks. I'll take my services elsewhere. And so he allegedly looked at some of the local schools around here. I think K-State went after him pretty hard. And obviously, Les Miles did as well, and he ended up signing with us. So he's definitely an interesting story. He's only played 1 year of organized football, but that year was apparently good enough to get him an offer from Michigan. So that was the one that I think caught my eye the most.
Yeah, and I mean, to kind of talk about him, he is a he was pretty much used all over the field. I actually was watching the Les Miles press conference. You know, he was talking about, you know, the particular one highlight that they showed was him playing as quarterback, but then he took off running down the field. So the plan from everything that they're saying is he is going to be a running back on this roster. He weighs in at 210 pounds, so he is a bigger running back, more of a bruiser type back. At least that's what's expected.
Right.
And actually, I was listening, you know, and part of that. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was I was hearing it from, but essentially what they had said was, you know, he had come in for a visit and was talking with some of the guys, and some of the other guys on the team right now were talking about how they needed a bigger back and, you know, was he ready to kind of step into that role? And that really made an impression for him. So, you know, it seems like it was a very, very good recruiting job, not only by the staff to get in there as soon as possible after Michigan made it pretty clear that, you know, they wanted him to wait. But also by the rest of the team, like the guys, you know, welcoming him in, you know, giving him a clear indication of how he was going to fit in and how he, you know, that chemistry was going to work right away. So, you know, and I think that's kind of the biggest, I guess the biggest positive from everything I've heard about Les Miles is that he's not afraid. He's not afraid to include all of the other guys that are there at the program. You know, he's really, really good about giving that, you know, that deference to his staff and giving them the credit for all the good recruiting that they've been doing. But he also is talking about the individual players that are involved when they're recruiting. You know, when they come in on a visit, the players are probably just as big of a part of that recruiting visit as anybody on staff. And so there was numerous times where he highlighted that and talked about, you know, just how important it was, all the people, all the athletes here at Kansas, and just how important it was to get everybody in the program involved and how easy it is to sell the program because of all the people that are involved. All right. So, yeah, I'm not sure that I would actually say that he was the biggest surprise. Now, he was probably the biggest surprise on that particular day. Like, so on today.
Well, Gavin, I thought that's what the question was.
Well, no, right. But like Gavin Potter is another one who could have fit that just because there was so much chatter about him going to Kansas State.
Yep, I agree.
In terms of just of the guys that recently signed, I think, to be honest, I mean, he announced that he was going to go ahead and sign, but Stephen Parker really surprised me when I heard, you know, that he was signing. When he committed to the Jayhawks, he committed actually a couple days before. So that was a little bit surprising to me. And, you know, we actually have had that happen before where a guy commits pretty close to the signing deadline and then ultimately decides, maybe not, you know, and goes somewhere else. We've been burned like that before. So it wasn't completely a surprise that he went ahead and followed through and signed. But just in terms of the guys like that, I wouldn't have expected us to get Stephen Parker, I think, was like the biggest get for us that I wasn't expecting. So,
and I get that, but I mean, if you take a little bit closer look at it too, him coming to Kansas does make some sense. Obviously, we have a ton of playing time on the defensive line. We lost all four of our starters from last year, and then his other finalists were Nebraska and Tech, reportedly, right? And Texas Tech is changing coaches, and the position coach that recruited him to Texas Tech is now at Kansas, so you've got that connection there. And then, you know, if you look at Nebraska, one of our commenters made a great point. Nebraska has, I think, three or four DNs signed this year already, and they signed two or three last year. So why would he want to go up there where he's not going to play for two or three years? So coming to Kansas made a ton of sense, and him saying that he would do that and stick with that, I guess it really didn't surprise me that much. I think maybe just the stars behind his name is the most surprising part. But
yeah, I mean, he
wasn't easily surprised with that.
Right, he easily is the headliner of this class now.
Right,
just because he's the only one that's a consensus 4-star player. But you know, I was just a little bit surprised. One, because you know we've had other athletes that have been in that situation where it was clear they were going to get playing time at KU, and that was probably the only place they were definitely going to get immediate playing time. But I think that really speaks to the power and the draw that having a coach like Les Miles, you know, gives you is, you know, before when that's happened, a guy like David Beatty doesn't necessarily inspire confidence, you know, in guys in terms of being able to use them correctly. And even if you get a bunch of playing time, there was no guarantee it was going to be, you know, good playing time and good exposure. But having a guy like Les Miles, he's a big name to play for. It's really easy to get excited to come play for him. You know, you maybe are potentially playing on a team that's not quite ready to compete, you know, at this point. And I think anybody who says that that's not the case is kind of kidding themselves. You know, I'm not saying it's not possible that they could have a really good year this year coming up. But if the expectation is anything other than, you know, three or four wins as an expectation, then you're probably trying to get a little too far ahead of things. But a guy like Les Miles, you know that maybe it won't be an immediate, you know, playing really, really well together as a team, but you're going to get that development from him. You're going to have that opportunity, at least in your last couple years here, to really have built something and seen the dividends of coming on at the very beginning of a Les Miles tenure. So, all right. So, obviously, we already did biggest surprise, but I want to know, what was your favorite moment of the day? There was a lot of interesting commitment announcements, some interesting videos that showed up on Twitter. I have an idea of which one I think you're going to talk about here, but which one was your favorite, or which one was the best, like, overall moment there?
Well, I'll go ahead and one-up you just a little bit, Andy, and I'll give an honorable mention to, I believe it was Belton Gardner, who had the giant thrones in his school auditorium where he sat down and signed his letter of intent. So that was pretty entertaining, I guess. But I think that Gavin Potter kind of steals the show here with the hijinks that he pulled on his signing day.
Yeah. So for those that haven't seen it yet, I definitely recommend. We actually have retweeted it from the podcast Twitter. But essentially what he did is he showed up to his signing ceremony wearing a K-State hoodie.
Which is important because he's been a long time verbal commit to K-State.
Right. So that was kind of the assumption. There was some, you know, even when there were some rumors swirling that he had like visited Lawrence and was still potentially considering Texas Tech, like the big money or the, you know, the quote unquote smart money was on he's going to Kansas State. Like the Kansas right. State recruiting guys, the Rivals guy, he got into a Twitter war essentially with a Kansas guy saying like there's no way he went to Lawrence for a visit or anything like that. which I thought was kind of funny, but
yeah, that was funny.
But right, so he, you know, he's wearing the K-State sweatshirt, he's holding the pen in his hand, he's like, I've decided I'm gonna go ahead and play it, and it looks like he's getting ready to sign, you know, the letter of intent, just wearing the K-State hoodie. Then he drops the pen on the table, pulls off the K-State hoodie, and is wearing a Texas Tech t-shirt underneath. And then once again goes and picks up the pen, acts like he's going to go ahead and sign again.
As people start to clap, by the way, to clap and cheer.
There was at least one guy that started whooping really, really loud in the video. Drops the pen again, takes that shirt off, and he has a KU jersey, basically, well, not really a jersey, but like a KU.
Body painted on.
Right, body painted onto his chest. And stood up and turned around. There's the number 12, and then Jayhawks on the back. And then his dad, I think it's his dad that was sitting next to him, you know, pulls out the KU hat and puts it on his own head. And at that point, then people, you know, kind of really started to understand what was going on. His mom had a good chuckle when he did that. You know, it was definitely an interesting video. And then he went to follow it up, you know, the interview afterwards, talking about how Oklahoma and Oklahoma State were going to, you know, severely regret ever letting him get out of the state, like talking a bunch of trash, which maybe he might go back and eat those words later. He probably will, at least for the first year or two. But, you know, it's one of those things. It's hard not to get fired up when you have a guy that believes in the program that much, especially someone who wasn't really expected to come here. You know, it tells you just how powerful that message is coming from Les Miles and coming from the rest of the coaching staff. As for my favorite moment, though, like that one was great. But the one that gave me goosebumps the second I saw it was actually it was Coach Eckler on Twitter put up a video when one of the coaches it was the coaching room where all the coaches were together, you know, trying to update news, trying to see, you know, when guys were going to commit.
Yeah.
And one of the coaches comes rushing into the room and says, oh, I got a text. It's Harris. Harris has signed. And then as the whole room just goes ballistic. Everybody's just yelling and cheering and high-fiving. You know, it was a grainy little video. It was really hard to actually see the individual people on it. But the fact that they got so excited over a guy like, you know, just the pure joy, you can tell how much they really enjoy doing this and how much this entire staff works well together. You know, that everybody on the team just went crazy when they got the news that Marcus Harris was signing.
Yeah, it was definitely a cool moment. Terrible video. I mean, these coaches have to have better cell phones.
I know.
That, right? but yeah, that was pretty cool.
All right. So, you know, there was a few other surprises, I think. The fact that we were only expecting about 5 people to sign and we ended up getting 9 more.
Yep.
You know, it looks like we have another kicker now.
All right. I saw that.
It's supposed to be pretty good. You know, they were touting that he can kick it 60 yards without a problem. So maybe
right.
That means we're going to have, you know, someone to step up and take over for Gabriel Rui.
Well, instead of punting on 4th and 1 from midfield, now we'll just kick a field goal.
Yeah, but I think that had a lot, you know, I think that we might have actually done it a couple times with Rui if Les Miles had been calling the shots. I don't think it would have mattered who we had kicking if David Beatty was still, you know, actually calling the shots. We would probably still be punting from the, you know, from our own or from the opponent 35-yard line or something like that. So,
yeah.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to bring that up.
No, that's all right. So there was a few other, and I'm trying to make sure that I'm only talking about the guys that we just signed because we've got quite a few on this list. I didn't grab the list that was just the new people, but Velton Gardner, I believe, was someone who just signed today.
Correct.
Yeah, he was the other guy out of Dallas. Actually,
yep.
that was a big surprise, and that was kind of the, not necessarily nationally, but in terms of the big, like, Midwest and Big 12 type recruiter guys we're talking about, that's a huge deal for Kansas. They were able to get both of those Dallas players that they were targeting. So Velton Gardner is listed as an athlete. You know, he's a three-star.
He played mostly quarterback in high school, but I think he probably, and then I watched a grand total of 30 seconds of huddle highlights, but I think he probably projects as a running back. He's not very big. He's 5'9", a buck 70.
Right. Yeah. So he's not, you're right. He's not that big. He's probably going to be, you're right, a running back most likely, which with how many running backs we had got, you know, at first I was originally thinking, well, maybe, you know, what does this say? Does that mean that we're not really expecting Puka back?
I've had that thought several times today, and gosh, I don't know, man.
I have as well, but I'm at least encouraged by it. Doesn't seem like there doesn't seem to have been any particular news like around that. You know, he's basically acting as if nothing has really changed with his status or anything like that. You know, he's still putting stuff up on Instagram about, you know, all the wonderful time he's having with the program and everything, and there's a few guys that I believe on Twitter who have said essentially that they haven't heard anything about him, you know, and being imminently dismissed or anything like that. Like, it seems like it's business as usual, that unless, you know, additional details come out or he doesn't do something he's supposed to with the legal system, that he may have to sit a game or two, maybe at the beginning of the year. But they fully expect him to still stay with the program. So again, I'm not reporting any of that, but everything that I've heard kind of indicates that it doesn't seem like there's any kind of imminent, you know, movement on getting rid of Puka or anything like that because of that whole domestic violence issue that he had. Which, to be honest, we're not really sure what the extent of any of that was. So it's not like we really are qualified to really make any kind of judgments on whether he should be with the program or not. So
yeah, right. All we know is that he has applied for diversion and
it's been
sometime this month there's a hearing on whether or not to approve it. So.
I believe it's actually next week. Is essentially there was a hearing that was scheduled just in case it wasn't approved and they needed to move forward. The last I heard, it has been approved. And at this point, that court date is essentially just going to say, yep, everything went through and, you know, rubber stamping it essentially. So hopefully that's actually still the case and we can – but I mean, I'm just imagining how stacked this running back position is going to be this next year. You know, if we have Puka and then we have I'm trying to think of everyone that's going to be there. I mean, you know, we're talking about Gardner and we're talking about Amari. You know, and then
Khalil Herbert will be back.
Right, Herbert will be back. And I mean, I'm just trying to think, we didn't really lose too many guys. So we're going to take a stacked backfield and essentially double stack it. So, all right. Well, we're going to go ahead and jump. We got a couple other things that I want to talk about, but real quick, before we do that, I'm going to go ahead and send it to a quick break. We will be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right. So just a couple quick things I wanted to talk about still here. You know, there was some speculation that actually Les Miles' son just graduated from North Carolina, is looking to be a graduate transfer to another program. There was a lot of speculation that maybe he was going to come and be a Jayhawk. I don't know how likely that is now at this point, just given the fact that we have two quarterbacks in this class. In McVitie, Thomas McVitie, and the other one, I just had his name and I lost it. Hold on,
I got you. I bear mentioning that Miles' son is a quarterback. He's been a backup at North Carolina.
Right.
And if you include the athletes, we actually have four quarterbacks in this class. We have Thomas McVitie, who's the big time JUCO recruit. Tory Loughlin, who was originally a 2018 recruit. Went to JUCO last year but didn't play, so he still has 4 years of eligibility. Velton Gardner played quarterback in high school, and Jordan Medley out of North Carolina had offers from all the service academies plus, like, UMass or something like that. Decommitted from Charlotte to come to KU. That was another one of the surprises this morning. Jordan Medley, big kid, 6'3", 200, just got an absolute cannon for an arm. The highlights are very impressive. I would say at least two of those guys are going to change positions. You're not going to have four quarterbacks come in one class. Loughlin or Gardner or two of those guys are going to change positions.
Yeah, I also don't think it's likely, though. That, I mean, even if he really wanted his son to come to Kansas, I don't know that there's room for another guy at the quarterback position when they have so many that they're already going to have to move
Right, yeah, because you also have the incumbents, too. You still have Carter Stanley and Miles Kendrick on the roster. So you add a fifth quarterback, and you've got quite the log jam.
Not only that, but you add in the fact that, you know, we were only expecting 15 in this class, and apparently there was actually room for four more than that. I found that kind of interesting because, you know, in the actual press conference that he held at the end of signing day, you know, they actually asked him about that. You know, they were like, well, it's, you know, is this – this ended up being a little bit bigger than you probably expected it, right? And he's like, no, actually, this is the number that we anticipated right from the beginning. Which seems a little weird because I'm pretty sure he was one of the ones that said in that Hawk Talk interview when he first got hired that they were looking at they had probably about 15 scholarships to give.
Yep. He is exactly the source of the 15 number, yeah.
Right. And so, you know, he did confirm that all these guys are going to be on scholarship.
Right.
So I don't know if this is another situation where we're borrowing a few more scholarships or if there really was more than we originally thought. Which, I mean, either way, I don't know that I'm necessarily too concerned about it. I just thought it was a little interesting. You know, the other thing that I've noticed, and this was actually mentioned as well in the press conference, is that while they got a bunch of guys from a bunch of different positions, the one thing that most of these guys had in common is that they're really big, really strong,
yep.
really athletic, just big guys. And he specifically addressed that too, you know, saying that, well, we really want this team to be playing physical style football, and they're basically lost all their big physical guys at these positions. And so they wanted to make sure that they signed them. He also specifically mentioned that next year, you know, they're going to be looking for a lot of offensive line help. You know, they think that the guys that they have coming back can play that style of football, but they're going to end up losing those guys and are going to need more guys. So next year I'm expecting a class that's going to be pretty heavy on offensive linemen, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But yeah, I mean, so then he kind of just talked through some of the different recruiting battles. Stephen Parker was obviously a pretty big recruiting battle. They jumped on him pretty much right away. He also specifically talked about Amari Pesek Hickson, you know, the story he had there was actually kind of interesting. Okay, he was talking about how when they first got hired, you know, he was looking through the list of all the top guys from Kansas, and obviously Amari kind of stuck out to him, but he was already committed to Michigan. And so his, you know, thought was, oh, man, I'd love to have that guy. But because he was already committed somewhere, they didn't really, you know, prioritize him initially. And then when the news came out that he wasn't going to be able to necessarily sign with Michigan because of the crunch of, you know, the extra people that they wanted to add and everything, he jumped in there immediately and was doing everything he could to try to get in there. So I found that interesting, kind of getting that little peek into there. Were there any other – you know, any other mentions of any of the guys that you found interesting or anything like that?
Not out of the press conference, you mean?
Either that or anything that you've kind of seen on Twitter since then.
Yeah, I mean, nothing that really stands out to me. I do want to address your comment about the offensive line just real quick.
Yeah.
Just looking at a quick scan of the depth chart from last year, it looks like we're going to have 6 out of our 10 offensive linemen on the 2 deep are going to be seniors this year. So, yeah, they're going to be losing a ton of offensive linemen. It's really hard for high school recruits to come in and play right away on the offensive and even defensive lines. So I imagine that while they'll have to go heavy on offensive line in the 2020 class, but a couple of those guys at least are going to have to be either transfers or JUCOs. You know, get some high school guys that they can develop for a year or two before they plug them in. But that's really all that kind of stood out to me in terms of a class overall, I guess, there are no offensive linemen in this year's class. 5, I think, defensive linemen and a couple of linebackers. And then you're right, a lot of tall guys. Only 2 guys under 6'1". So
yeah, and they specifically targeted defensive line because
they did.
All
they did.
Defensive line that they lost.
But they had to. Yeah, we lost 4 starters. Yeah.
Right. So, all right. Any other final thoughts to kind of wrap up the day?
I don't know. Yeah, I think Kansas football is probably done. You know, sometimes you get a straggler on, you know, Wednesday or maybe a couple weeks later or one over the summer or something. I suppose that's possible. But you know, with the scholarship situation where it is, and you know, well, we don't know exactly where it is. All we know is what Miles has said. But he also said, again, you know, like we just talked about, he also said we were only getting 15 players this year. So,
right.
I think we're probably done. I don't think there's probably any more surprises out there for us. I would like to go ahead and note that following the early signing period, right? So, at the first of the year, you know, after the early signing period in December, I believe our class rank was number 106 by 247 Sports. So in between then and now, which was like, 7 weeks, something like that,
right,
we're up to number 64. So, right behind Washington State, KU is the 9th ranked class in the Big 12. K-State's at 61, we're at 64, and Texas Tech is at 66. So we're, you know, and a couple of those guys, we flipped from Texas Tech and K-State. So, I don't know that I would call it miraculous, but Les Miles did a hell of a job in 80 days putting together a recruiting class. And if he can do that in 80 days, I can't wait to see what he can do in 365.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been absolutely ridiculous what he's been able to do. To give it even a little bit more perspective, and I want to go ahead and grab the actual tweet. But someone was talking about where we were on when Miles was hired, you know, and comparing that to now. And that turnaround is absolutely ridiculous. So here we go. It's actually from friend of the podcast, the Fitz at FitzDaddy85. He says, this 2019 class had zero commits and was ranked 174th in the nation when Les Miles took over. It now has 19 commits and is ranked 65th in the nation. I think we had a little bit of movement since then. But Kansas football has literally witnessed a miracle, is what he wrote. I mean, and honestly,
yeah.
I mean, it, you have to think, though, it is kind of a little bit miraculous, the fact that they went from literally having absolutely nobody to filling out a class this well, that not only did it have big names, like big stars, you know, but it addressed essentially all the major positions where they had big problems, you know, and it allowed them to get guys that are probably going to play a completely different style than what they were before, you know, in a way that is going to improve this team. How much is it going to improve the team? Not really sure. And obviously a lot of that has to do with, you know, how do they coach these guys up? How do they coach up the guys that are already on the team? That's going to have a bigger indication, I think, in terms of, you know, how the actual season is going to go. But to go from essentially no hope, you know, thinking this is going to be a lost year where we could potentially only win a game or two because the recruiting class was completely shot, you know, we're basically back to the same point where we were last year. Like, and
here's the problem I have with that. Here's the problem I have with that is that let's say that after that Oklahoma game, Jeff Long comes out and gives Coach Beatty that vote of confidence, go out there and recruit for us, David. And, you know, you're our coach next year. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he's still going to cobble together a recruiting class. He's going to get JUCOs. He's going to get two-star guys, and KU's going to finish somewhere in the 90s, 100s, yeah, 80s, 90s, 100s in the recruiting rankings. And they're going to sign 15 to 20 guys, and they're going to have their recruiting class. That would have happened. Now, is that a miracle going from 172 to 100? You know, I don't know. I guess maybe. But I'm not trying to diminish what Les Miles has done, but only 10 of these guys had other P5 offers. The rest of them were typical Beatty recruits with Mountain West offers and Sun Belt offers and MAC offers. You know, it's if you look at the class overall, it's good considering. He has a point that it's good considering where we were. I mean, but it's a pretty typical Kansas football recruiting class. It's a bunch of three-star guys, and you're hoping a couple of them turn into all Big 12 type players.
Well, I mean, the main thing that I noticed, though, is there was not, you know, there wasn't a huge reliance on community college guys. I mean, there
was absolutely,
few,
yeah.
There's
no,
few,
and there's
no,
only five.
Right. There was a few.
Which I wanted to mention, too. I just saw earlier this afternoon, Benton Smith reported at the Lawrence Journal World that one of the JUCOs who signed, Justin Ford, a defensive back, he signed in December, is not being listed on any of the releases today. So we apparently did lose a recruit over the last 7 weeks or so. So instead of six JUCOs, we only have five JUCOs. And I honestly think that these are the perfect JUCOs. It's the right amount. You know, four to six JUCOs in a class, and all of these guys are going to play. Every single one of these guys is going to play from day one because they're all positions of need. So right. Les Miles absolutely recruited, went about doing the JUCO recruiting the right way.
That's weird that you say that Justin Ford isn't on any of this stuff because he's still showing on like 247 or 247 Sports, and he's still showing on Rivals. He's still showing up everywhere and as part of
he's showing everywhere up except on KU Athletics releases.
That's really weird.
I saw Benton Smith report that. Yeah,
I'm wondering maybe if it's an academic qualification sort of thing, or maybe I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
That we'll find out pretty soon. But to be honest, and that may not necessarily be a bad thing if he was a guy that maybe wasn't going to be a big part of what they have moving forward, and it saves us a scholarship.
Possibly.
It may not be a bad thing, but.
Yeah, and secondary is going to be one of our strengths this year. We're returning, you know, all but one starting corner. You know, Mike Lee, Corion Harris, those guys will all be back. So it's not a huge loss, and hopefully somebody who's already on the roster can step up and take that starting corner job. But
one thing I did want to revisit, though, you were talking about how this is basically your typical Kansas recruiting class. And while I will agree the final ranking is kind of there, you know, this there's a little bit of a difference here because typically you have that full year to build a recruiting or year plus to build that recruiting class. And you have, you know, or when there's a coaching change, typically, you know, you may lose some of the guys and they're in the recruiting class are already there, but you usually have a good 7 or 8 guys that you can base that recruiting class on and then find ways to try to improve it. You know, this class literally had one commit when David Beatty got fired, and that guy decommitted pretty quickly after, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The fact that Les Miles had absolutely nothing to start with in some ways was a blessing because he didn't have to worry about, you know, evaluating the guys that were already there and determining if he really wanted to keep them and if it was worth, you know, continuing to fight for him or not. But obviously in other ways, he didn't have that head start. You know, if, you know, these are the guys that we already have and we're pretty solid with, and, you know, it'll take a little bit of work to keep them, but not nearly as much as recruiting guys out of the blue. And obviously, you know, the position of him being the guy, you know, and kind of having the name that he does helped a little bit, but, you know, he actually talked about in his press conference today, they got a pretty slow start on the recruiting trail because it took him a while to fill out his staff. It took him a while to fill out a staff because he wasn't coming from somewhere else. He didn't already have a bunch of guys already lined up as, you know, these are my guys that I'm bringing with me. But he also didn't do it the way that that most people usually fill out coaching staff. Like usually what they do is they say, these are guys that I've worked with in the past. These are guys that I really know. These are my good friends. You know, I'm getting this head coaching gig. Why don't you come on with me? He didn't do that. He went, he evaluated at every single position, you know, is this a guy that I think fits into the vision that I have for this program? And did the actual full interview process. And so it took him, he was saying it took him probably about 3 weeks or so to get up and running to where you would normally would be a guy just getting hired. Like he has the infrastructure already there. He already has an idea of who he's going to keep and you know, who he's not. And normally you've already had these kind of conversations with people before you get hired because you bring that information to the interview. He didn't have all of that to start. So not only did he get the jumpstart the staff and get all that going, but he constructed an entire recruiting class from scratch, all of that in 80 days, which I think that's what makes it so impressive. It's not the fact that, you know, he made a huge improvement on the recruiting classes from what we've had the last few years. It's the fact that he was able to not lose any ground, even though he only had 80 days to build a staff and build a complete recruiting class from scratch. All right.
Yeah, no, all fair points, and I get it. But, I mean, I feel like we would have ended up close to this anyway, even if David Beatty was here. So that's where I'm coming from.
I don't know that we would have ended up close to this because, you know, the years where David Beatty got close to that, you know, he had 12 guys before, you know, we were halfway through the season. He only had two guys that were still committed when he was coaching. So, you know, I don't know that he could have scrambled the same way and actually filled out a class the same way, especially since, you know, the better guys that we got in this class weren't even considering Kansas when David Beatty was there. Nobody was buying into his vision. And, you know,
a lot of them came with their assistant coaches when Les Miles hired them. I mean,
well, not only that, but like the local guys, like Jaden Russell, you know, he flat out told us in the interview he had here that he was not considering Kansas at all one bit when David Beatty was there, because there was no direction for the program from everything that he could tell. And Les Miles coming in immediately piqued his interest, and he could immediately tell that things were different when, you know, he started having that conversation with Miles. And so, you know, I think the guys that they would have been able to fill that class out with, I don't think any of them would have even come close to the talent level of a guy like Jaden Russell. And he's probably like fifth or sixth in terms of, you know, the class, and just in terms of the raw talent that he has. Now, granted,
you almost tell him you said that. I'm going to tell him you said that.
like, if you're looking at, like, the star ratings and everything, I think he ends up being, to be honest, I think he's even further down the list than that. Let me see. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's seventh in terms of, like, the actual raw ratings. And, you know, but what he, you know, he's not necessarily in terms of raw athleticism, but he's going to be a very important, I think, leader for this team. And that was also something that Miles talked about today, is that, you know, Jaden Russell was the first guy to commit to Miles, and he's probably going to be one of the most important because he's going to be that big leader on the defense there. Maybe not, you know, his first year, but in the next couple of years, you're going to see him step up into a big leadership role. And so, you know, a guy like that, you know, it just in terms of like the raw talent, he's probably right, you know, pretty close to the middle tier of this recruiting class. And you wouldn't have gotten anyone even close to his talent level, I think, if Beatty had stayed, because nobody took him seriously at all. And to have these intangibles, the leadership abilities and things like that, you know, you wouldn't have had any of those in the recruiting class either. So I don't think there's any way that that a recruiting class led by David Beatty would have even come close to getting out of the 90s in the rankings, even if he had the full year to put it together and got to about the, you know, the 15 to 20 guys we're talking about. Most of them would have been two-star guys. You know, we only have one two-star guy in this entire recruiting class, and that's the kicker that we got out of Ohio. Typically that's just because, you know, special teamers, kickers and punters typically don't get very high star ratings.
Right, they don't. And I'm not trying to be a David Beatty apologist by any means. I hope people listening know me well enough by now to know that. But, I mean, that's an awful lot of trash talk on a guy that brought in our first ever top 100 recruits, plural. So I'm just saying, it's all conjecture. We can argue till we're blue in the face. I'm not buying it. You're not buying it. That's fine.
Well, but again, I don't think that that's fair to give Beatty all the credit for the, you know, first top 100 guys that we have.
Well, I'm sure Tony Hull did most of the work.
Tony Hull.
Yeah, I'm sure it was, but I mean, Tony Hull had to sell them on David Beatty, so you know, he had to have been involved in there somewhere. Yeah,
good point. All right. Well, any other final thoughts about the recruiting class?
No, I think we hit everything that I had in mind.
Sounds good. So yeah, we'll go ahead and leave it there. I mean, I think just kind of my final thought wrapping up is that, you know, this is a much better recruiting class than I think even the most optimistic Kansas fans really hoped for coming into the Les Miles hiring. You know, the reactions that I saw online, essentially everyone said, wow, this is better than any of us thought we were going to get. You know, this is at least a decent class, and imagine what's going to happen with these guys and what we can look forward to moving forward. So,
yeah, now if he gets a top 30 class next year, call it miraculous.
Oh my gosh, that would be awesome. Of course, you know, when they win 7 games this year and go to a bowl game, it's not going to be that hard. Hey, I thought if we're going to talk about miraculous things, we might as well go all the way, right, and talk about
I did renew my season tickets today on the last day for the loyalty pricing. I did finally get that taken care of, so.
Well, now is the time to do it. Get in on the ground floor. So. All right, Mike. Thanks again.
Whoa. I think I got in on the sub basement floor. So.
Well, true. We had to tunnel down to get in when we got in, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh gosh. All right. Thanks again, Mike.
And that'll do it for today's episode. Again, you know, as I alluded to in that interview, this is the first official episode to be posted as part of the new Rock Chalk Talk podcast channel. So as it stands right now, the Rock Chalk podcast is the only show that is currently on the channel. So everything you see in the feed today is from our show. It's all of our past episodes. I definitely recommend you guys go back and listen to some of the old episodes if you'd like to, especially the ones we did. They'll be marked season 1.5, where we did kind of the, you know, remembering the 2008 football season. Those are always a good listen, and those don't really age very, very poorly at all. So those, you know, you can go back and listen to those, and most of that analysis that's in there is gonna be just as good. But yeah, you know, so definitely kind of poke around in the new feed. We are looking and we're talking with some people about adding some new shows. So eventually we're going to get to the point here where I'm not the only voice you're going to hear. You know, you're not going to just hear me talking with Mike and Fetch and whatever guests I happen to get on. We're hoping to get a few other podcast hosts that will join into on the channel, bring their own shows, bring their own ideas. If you guys are interested in that, you know, if there's anybody that's listening out here that's always wanted to have a show talking about the Kansas Jayhawks, definitely go ahead and contact me. We can see what we can work out. You know, we are, again, we're always looking for more talent. You know, the whole idea with Rock Chalk Talk and this Rock Chalk podcast is that, you know, it's by the fans, it's for the fans. We really want to get as many differing viewpoints and as many new ideas as we can. So definitely contact me. I am on Twitter at Rock Chalk Pod. You know, you can email us rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com. You can also contact us on the website on Rock Chalk Talk. Now that we're officially part of Rock Chalk Talk, whereas before it was kind of just an unofficial partnership, you know, we are doing a lot more things with the actual backing of SB Nation and Vox and the platform that they have there. So, you know, we are definitely looking to utilize that and leverage that a little bit more to make it a little easier to get all of this out to everybody. But also to make it a little easier for you guys to interact with us as well. So if you do have any questions, any comments, anything like that, definitely please do hit us up. Please do go find us on iTunes. The link there should be the same. We didn't really change anything from there. I've gotten everything redirected over to the new feed. For those of you guys that are currently subscribed to the show already, this change over to the new platform, it may potentially, you know, cause a few hiccups here and there. You may have to go back out and resubscribe. You may have all your episodes marked as unplayed. I'm really sorry about that. I tried to minimize that as much as possible to get everything switched over, but there are, you know, unfortunately some of those little growing pains of switching. But you know, definitely do. I've updated a lot of the links that we have on the Twitter account and everything to point to either the new feed directly, or it's still pointing to our iTunes feed. So, again, if you haven't already, please do find us out on iTunes. Rate, subscribe, 5 stars, nice comments, all that fun stuff. It really does help to get the podcast out there so that more people will listen to it. So, you know, I really do want to thank you guys for listening to this episode. We had a really good time talking about this National Signing Day. It was a really, really big surprise. Some of the signings that we had, you know, as I said on Twitter, didn't really know what to do with myself for this entire day because I'm not used to surprise signings that are actually good surprises. But yeah, we'll go ahead and leave it there. Once again, thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.